After two suspicious fires in Mabel's neighborhood, an excavation unearths some long-buried secrets and a body. Miss Maple Mysteries, Episode 3, Call Before You Dig. Ladybug, ladybug, fly away home. Your house is on fire. Your children have flown. I can usually tune out the sound of sirens in the distance, but that summer night, the sound persisted. It got louder and louder, and my bedroom was suddenly flooded with flashing lights, red, white, red, white. I woke up wondering if aliens had invaded and if we were about to be scooped up into spaceships for redistribution to other planets. Then the acrid smell of smoke filled my nostrils. Fire, I thought, and jumped out of bed. Maggie May, just a puppy then, started to howl. Hush, baby, I said. It's okay, I'm here. I'm just going to have a quick look out the window. Eric's house, across the street, was ablaze. The kitchen exploded with a boom, and that side of the building collapsed. Firefighters aimed their hoses at the huge, bright red column of flames at the back of the house. I grabbed the dog and my robe and rushed out to see if I could help. On the street, a tall, uniformed police officer waved a flashlight to direct the fire trucks. I caught his eye and asked, "Are we okay? Do I need to evacuate?"
"No, you're fine," he called back. "Please go back inside, ma'am."
"Okay," I said. Then I spotted Eric. I'd noticed him earlier that evening, loading something long and heavy into his car. Now I realized that I'd never seen him with a beard before, and never seen him looking so frantic and confused. I waved. "Eric, do you want to come shelter in my house?" I knew he lived alone. We'd had a few conversations over the years, and once he'd even driven me to work when my car was in for repairs. His answer was to tell me, in no uncertain terms, to effing mind my own business. Poor man. I couldn't imagine how terrible it would be to see all your earthly possessions destroyed. I was surprised, but I swallowed a lump in my throat and tried not to take it personally. The next morning, the house was reduced to rubble. Eric must have gone to a hotel that night. Maybe his insurance paid for it. Rebuilding started right away and took almost a year. It was interesting to watch. Workers cleared debris into a dumpster, poured a new basement, roughed in the walls with 2x4s, then added brick siding, a roof, doors, and windows. But it seemed like the work was never quite done. Eric was in and out, looking at plans and pointing at things, but never for long, and never friendly enough for a chat. 6 years after that fire, in the dead of winter, it happened again. Distant sirens increased in volume to an ear-splitting shrillness, emergency lights flashed on pillars of fire, and before the night was over, the whole house was rubble once more. The same tall, friendly police officer was on scene again, but by then I knew his name. Detective Charlie Egan. He lives around the corner, and he drove Eric away in the back of a police car. A few weeks after that, Maggie May and I were shoveling the front steps when Charlie happened along, walking his big German Shepherd, Thunder. Maggie May barked. She's terrified of thunder, and usually she hides and whimpers, but she must have been feeling territorial that day because she ran across the snow to the street and bayed at them like a banshee. Charlie, friendly giant that he is, crouched down, spoke soothingly, then grasped her collar and held her until I got there. "Thank you," I said. "I should have tied her up. I'm sorry." He smiled.
"Very brave of her to come at Thunder like that," he said in his calm, deep voice.
"Silly pooch," I said, clipping on the leash as Charlie gave her another reassuring pat. "Charlie, how's Eric from across the street? I saw him go with you the night of the fire. Were you taking him to a hotel? Is he okay?"
Charlie laughed. "A hotel, sure. Holiday Innes."
"Pardon?"
"The Innes Road Detention Center. That's what the inmates call it.
He's in jail? Why?
Charged with arson.
You think he set fire to his own house? Why on earth would he do that?
Insurance.
Didn't he get insurance money already to rebuild the house?
The theory is that the rebuild got to be too expensive, so he poured gasoline around and lit a match, hoping that the insurance company would give him another payout. Plus, he's so far behind on his mortgage and tax payments that the bank is probably going to repossess the house.
Eric Witteveen?
Charlie looked at me sharply. How well do you know him?
Well, I'm thinking now that I never really knew him at all. The lot sat empty for a few months. Then a for sale sign went up, and the property sold a few weeks later. Not long after that, another crew came in with diggers and jackhammers to dig a new foundation. The endless noise was mind-boggling. I could hardly hear myself think. The best part of every day was around 5 o'clock when they finally quit for the day. I'd take a cup of tea, some cookies, a book, and Maggie May out to the wooden garden bench on my front step to enjoy the early spring sunshine and feel the silence in every pore. Sometimes one or two guys would stay behind a bit to clean up after the day's work, gathering up garbage and putting tools in the back of a truck. One day, I heard a strange yelp. A young man dropped what he was doing and ran across the street to me.
"Excuse me, miss, can I borrow your phone?"
He was a handsome, dark-skinned fellow in his mid-30s, I guessed. He responded automatically to Maggie May's excited bark, squatting to ruffle her fur. "My phone's out of charge, and I need to call my boss." "Yes, of course," I said. I got up, watched by two pairs of dark eyes. Maggie May's as round as buttons, and his, almond-shaped, glittering with emotion under dark brows. "What happened?"
"I think I found a body," he said,
and cleared his throat to cover the shake in his voice. A snake crawled up my spine. "If you think you found a body, you need to call the police." He stood up and rubbed his trim beard with both hands.
"But what if I'm wrong? If the police stop work on the site, my boss loses money, and if it's for no reason, I get fired."
I tried to shake off the prickle of unease. "What did you actually see?" He pressed his lips together, a surprisingly vulnerable look for such a broad-shouldered, burly guy.
"I'm not sure. I kind of freaked out and looked away."
"Old bones?" I said lightly. "An animal, maybe?" 150 years ago, a lot of Orleans was farmland, owned by the Grey Nuns. Maybe one old deer got lost in the woods and was never found. Now she can finally be laid to rest, poor soul. He shook his head.
"No, nothing like that. I think I saw a chrono watch."
That struck an ominous chord. "A chrono watch." He shrugged.
"You know, the kind you can use as a stopwatch."
"Bulky," I said, "with an extra ring around the top."
"Yeah, but this was attached to, like, an arm."
I put Maggie May in the house, grabbed my cell phone, and closed the door. "Show me." We both knew I shouldn't be on the construction site without a hard hat and steel-toed boots, but he seemed glad to have a second opinion. I stepped carefully around the chain-link fence and over the uneven terrain to a huge pit the size of a small gymnasium, hoping my young friend would benefit from a bit of distracting conversation, and knowing I would, I asked, "Why is this hole so much bigger than the foundation of the old house?" The calming effect was immediate. The physical terrain was uneven, but metaphorically he was back on solid ground.
"Because it's going to be three houses. We need deeper trenches to bring sewer and water services to them all."
The opening gaped below us, layers of roots, hard shale, and bedrock reaching 15 or 20 feet down. I nodded at a long-necked monster of a vehicle with a rolling trackpad instead of feet. "No wonder the digging has been so noisy," I said, "like a roaring Tyrannosaurus Rex fighting a screaming Brachiosaurus." "Excavators," he said.
With some kind of steel rod at the end of the neck, I said.
Hydraulic hammers, he said, to break up the bedrock and cement from the basement floor of the old house. Whoever did that floor did a terrible job.
I indicated another excavator with a shovel attachment instead of a hammer. And whoever was working that one left the door open and the lights on.
That was me, he said. I was clearing away excess chunks of concrete with the digger, and here, look what came up in the scoop.
The big shovel had come to a stop at about shoulder height. We stood on tiptoes and peered into it. Amid the rocks and rubble, covered in gray dust, was a human arm. Gray, stiff, and wearing a watch.
We definitely have to notify the police, I said, shocked and bewildered by the grisly discovery.
I made the call and passed him the phone. And you'd better let your boss know.
Thanks, he said. I'm Miles Stanhope, by the way. I live in Convent Glen.
Mabel Maple, I said, managing to smile. We're practically neighbors. Convent Glen is about a mile away, on the other side of the 174, the highway that cuts the suburb in half, but it's still Orleans. I looked around the lot.
Funny how that old shed survived both fires, I said.
Miles tapped in his boss's phone number.
I haven't looked, but one of the guys saw a car in there, an orange Toyota hatchback.
No way! I remember that car, I said, surprised and curious. But I haven't seen it in years. His boss came on the line. While they talked, I walked up the path of broken pavement that used to be Eric's driveway. The garage door was warped and rusted. I nudged the handle, but the door was too stuck for me to lift it open. Miles finished talking to his boss, turned off the excavator lights, closed the cab door, and joined me in front of the shed.
Want some help? He asked, returning my phone. Let's just peek in the side door, I said. Use your sleeve to open it so you don't leave any fingerprints. Although 6 years is a long time, I wonder if fingerprints last that long.
The side door wasn't locked and swung open easily.
There's your orange Toyota, said Miles, wrinkling his nose at the musty, dusty smell. Whose fingerprints should be on it?
The killer's, I said with grim determination.
If you mean the owner, he's already in jail waiting for his arson trial. Plus, come and see what else we found.
He took me to a small ladder near a dumpster on the other side of the lot. I stepped up and looked down into a mess of construction debris, drywall scraps, bits of furniture, old fluorescent lights, and dozens of plastic plant containers.
Flower pots, I said, mystified. I don't remember Eric being much of a gardener. And why so many light fixtures?
He raised one dark eyebrow.
The garden was indoors. A grow-op.
He offered me a hand to come down the ladder, which was unnecessary but appreciated.
He was growing marijuana, I asked. It's legal now, but it wasn't back then. And still not legal in these quantities,
he looked at his watch.
When will the police come?
Pretty soon, I think. Let's wait for them at my place.
Shouldn't I stay on guard? He said, hoping I would say no.
We can watch from there, he nodded, relieved.
And it's probably better than them finding us on the site.
As we walked across the street, I shook my head.
I can't get over the idea of Eric dealing drugs. You didn't notice anything?
Like what? He gave me a wry smile.
It was all over the internet a few years ago. Signs your neighbor is running a grow-op. Condensation on the windows. The grass is too long. Unexplained power surges. Curtains closed. Stuff like that. I can't remember the rest.
We crossed the lawn. I went up the two concrete steps to the wooden bench, moving the cookies to make room for him beside me, but he sat on the lower step and stretched out his legs.
Oh, and here's another sign. People coming and going at all hours.
I worked during the day, but now you mention it, evenings and weekends, yes, lots of visitors. Cookies? I passed him the plate, and he popped one in his mouth.
Thanks.
Finish them up, I said. Happy to watch him make them disappear. I wondered if Eric had some kind of mail order business or pyramid scheme like Amway selling soap.
Not soap, dope.
He grinned and handed me back the plate, then looked sideways at the bench.
Those legs look a little wobbly. Okay with you if I have a look at some of those bolts?
By all means. I got up and watched as he took a multi-tool from a pocket, unfolded it, and tightened something. I was still thinking about the mild-mannered Eric I knew. But drug dealers are gangsters, tough guys with guns and motorcycles who get in turf wars. Miles checked the fastenings on the other side of the bench.
And torch each other's places, he said, significantly.
I thought about that. It did explain the arson. But something just wasn't right. That really doesn't tally with the Eric I knew. Eric was friendly, polite, cheerful. He even gave me a ride to work one day when my car wouldn't start.
You liked him?
He meant it as a simple question, but it hit home. I felt an uncomfortable flash of warmth and maybe even blushed. He could see that he'd hit a nerve.
Sorry if that was rude.
No, it's okay, I said. I haven't thought about him for years, at least not like that, but after that ride, I thought he'd ask me out. He had a business trip lined up, but he said he'd call me when he got back.
And he never did?
He was back from the trip sooner than I expected, but he must have changed his mind about me. I thought he was just distancing himself so I wouldn't get the wrong idea.
He shifted the two of you into neutral.
I nodded. If he was mowing his lawn and I came out, he'd go in. If I was weeding the garden, he wouldn't even get his newspaper until I went in. And the night of the first fire, he snapped at me. I didn't say that I'd tried to rise above how much that had hurt my feelings. But at the time, it felt like just one more reason not to get to know my neighbors.
Well, people change.
He leaned on the armrest of the bench. It resisted as he pushed back and forth on it.
There, try the bench now.
I sat down. Much better, thanks. Sturdy, no wobbling. Much less likely to collapse under me. He scoffed.
It wasn't that bad. This thing, though, that could cause problems.
He tapped a brass screw that was sticking up on the side table and twisted it down with another gadget from his multi-tool.
Thanks. I'm always getting things caught on that little thing, like this sweater.
I touched the sleeve of my sweater beside my watch and spoke slowly, the pieces of the puzzle starting to fall into place. But I tell you what, I remember that chrono watch. It was Eric's pride and joy. He liked to time his commute into town.
The watch on the dead guy? Why would he give his watch to a dead guy?
I don't think he did. What if Eric is dead and someone else, an imposter, has been living in his house all these years?
Who?
He might have mentioned a brother. Bruno, I think his name was. His thick eyebrows shot up with a glint of humor.
An evil twin?
I smiled back briefly, still pondering the horrific scenario.
Maybe.
But anyone with the same build and coloring could look like him from across the street, especially if he grew a beard.
Wait, he had a beard? I read about the original fire online, and he didn't have a beard in the picture they had of him.
No, but the man I talked to on the night of the first fire did. So did the man I saw loading something wrapped in a carpet into the back of the orange Toyota hatchback that same night.
And you think there was a body in the carpet?
I shrugged and he went on.
Was that before or after the fire?
Before. What if Eric came back from the business trip, discovered that Bruno had started a grow-op, and threatened to call the police? He sat back down on the lower step.
They argue. Bruno kills Eric, hides the body in the car,
and sets fire to the house to cover the evidence. He nodded.
Or a fire breaks out while he's burning evidence in the backyard.
I thought about that. Maybe he was planning to burn the body too, but didn't get it out of the car before the fire trucks came.
Or he was afraid the fire marshal would discover human remains in the rubble. Those arson investigators don't miss much.
Yes, I said. Either way, he decides to claim the insurance money to rebuild. So he hides the body, assumes his brother's identity, then waits till they pour the basement floor.
To bury the body in the wet concrete.
He tilted his head toward the sound of police sirens, a faint wail in the distance, getting louder as they approached.
Wait, why does he set the second fire? Does he figure he can get another insurance claim?
Maybe, as you said. A rival drug dealer torched his place over a deal gone wrong. Bruno ends up in jail for arson, awaiting trial for something he didn't do. So he's stuck in jail, unable to protect his secret, while the bank repossesses his house and sells it to someone else who sends in another crew.
I almost feel sorry for the guy, he said. A sitting duck, in police custody for something he didn't do, waiting for them to find evidence of a much worse thing that he did do. Murder.
Well, here they are. We stood up, bathed in the glow of flashing lights. I smiled ruefully. I guess we have their case all wrapped up for them. He grinned back.
Is it true that you're the Miss Marple of Orleans?
We started towards the street.
You've heard of me? Your picture was in the Orleans Journal. Everyone reads that.
And uses it to line their cat litter box?
Well, yes, that too. That's why I remembered what you looked like.
Thanks a lot. The investigation paused construction, as Miles had feared. Between uniformed police officers, plainclothes detectives, and forensic people in white overalls, the activity was non-stop for the next few weeks. Then one day, Charlie Egan was kind enough to come over with an update.
Well, you were right, he said. Dental records confirm that the body in the concrete was Eric Wittevine.
I felt a dull ache in my gut. I hoped I wasn't right about that.
I know, he said. I'm sorry. By all accounts, he was a good guy.
And the man you have in custody?
Bruno Wittevine, his brother. Also, as you suspected.
How did Eric die?
Sharp blow to the back of the head. Looks like Bruno hit him with a tire iron, which he put back in Eric's car after wiping it carefully.
He grinned.
But not carefully enough for our forensic lab.
Then he kept the body in the car until the concrete was ready?
He stashed it in a freezer at his hunting camp. Carpet fibers in the freezer were a match to fibers in the car and on Eric's body.
I'm sorry for what happened to Eric. He was a good guy, and he certainly didn't deserve that. If I'd been a better neighbor, could I have helped him? Should I have noticed anything? I was working then and gone during the day. Or did I turn a blind eye to what was going on because I had a secret crush on him, and like a rejected, embarrassed high schooler, didn't want to have anything to do with him? And what if we had gone out on that date? Maybe we'd be happily married now with children who grew up to be just like Miles. We'd have two retirement pensions to live on, and maybe even grandchildren. Miles would come over with the kids and do odd jobs around the house. In any case, Miles was temporarily out of a job, so I was able to hire him to come over and do odd jobs around the house. I don't know how I ever managed without him. Thanks for listening to Call Before You Dig, Episode 3 of Miss Maple Mysteries, written and performed by Kathy McClellan, with production by John Nolan. Our company is Rag and Bone Puppet Theater, and you can visit our website at ragandbone.ca. Coming up next is Episode 4, Theoretical Rhododendrons. Mabel discovers a naked dead man in the upstairs bedroom of a stranger's house.